What's up? This is Boovies on Up, and it's October, our favorite month of the year. So sit back, join us month-long as we talk about a lot of horror movies.
What's up? This is Boovies on Up. Welcome back to our top 50 horror movies of all time. Seated across from me still is Mr. Dave Becella.
Still here.
Count Dave, I am Ryan. We are Boovies on Up. And this is the second installment of our top 50 list. And today we're going to take you through movies 40 through 31 on the list. And 40, we're going to start with a movie that is very near and dear to both of our hearts. We've done a specific episode on this movie. I believe it was last year on the show.
I think it was last Christmas.
It might have,
right,
yeah,
before. Yeah.
I think it was our Christmas special last year. It is a Christmas movie. It is Michael Dougherty's Krampus from 2015, starring Toni Collette, Adam Scott, and David Koechner. Krampus has some really great creatures. That attic scene, fantastic creatures. And that goes a long way in a horror movie. It also does a great job of making you like, or at least get to know, the characters before they get got.
It's especially good because you go into a movie like Krampus and you're almost expecting, like, oh, it's a monster movie. So it's just going to be this monster hunting
this
down.
This Krampus movie.
Yeah,
this Krampus monster.
This,
yeah,
Krampus monster hunting down everybody. But then you get all this other stuff that's way creepier than Krampus. This director, he's going to make the list again. Spoiler alert. I love this movie. It's very creepy. It's very good. It kind of throws everything out the window. Like, your pretty teenage girl isn't the survivor girl. She's,
nope,
spoiler alert, the first one
she
gone.
She does the worst job.
So it's really fun. It's really kind of dark and depressing. It's not the only Christmas horror movie, though. It's something that didn't make the list. Rare Exports, yeah, is a Christmas movie. I think it's easy to make a Christmas horror movie because you take something that people love so, mm-hmm, much and you turn it terrifying. So you've had some really bad Christmas, Black Christmas,
yeah,
Santa's Sleigh.
The like, Goldberg one.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there are some that, like, other holiday ones that are good.
Yeah.
April Fool's Day made your list but,
yes,
didn't make the top 50.
My Bloody Valentine.
The original wasn't,
yeah,
a bad. It's not great, but it's not a bad movie.
It was a hard one to leave off my list of 75.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's about right for it. And then, yeah, like, you've had other, like, Valentine, that David Boreanaz one. Mm. Like, and then there's another couple about a specific holiday that maybe we're celebrating this month. That'll come later. But I think it's an easy premise because you take something that's dear to people's heart and you just try to make it traumatizing.
Sure.
Krampus, I think, avoided doing, hey, let's just ruin Christmas. Like, it avoided that.
What it did was it took this, spoiler alert, Santa's not real. I'm sorry. It is a myth. So you take a Christmas myth that we've all known from when we were kids. So if there's a Santa, if there's a good side to this myth, there should be a polar opposite. And that's what Krampus is. So it's basically just the flip side of the Christmas coin.
Yeah, and it was done perfectly. I love this. Like, if you want to hear us gush about this, search our website, moviesonup.com, for Krampus, because we did an episode just last year, and we go way more in-depth on it, and we both love that movie. I love Michael Dougherty, Adam Scott, the whole cast. I love it.
Actually, I think we just talked about it, and we did our Toni Collette movies, too. So
probably.
Krampus comes up quite a bit. A movie that actually doesn't come up as much as Krampus, but we have it ranked higher on the list, is from 2007, directed by Oren Peli. It's Paranormal Activity, starring Katie Featherston and Micah Sloat. A bit like Saw, this is another one that was just such a great watch in theaters. You could almost, as you're sitting there, feel like the peaks and valleys of that movie. During the daytime, it's kind of a valley. It lets you rest. But when they kick on and you see those static shots of the bedroom at night, you know some shit's about to go down. And I'm watching it a bit like a kid on Christmas morning, waiting to see what they're going to do that's going to scare the shit out of everybody else in the theater. So, I mean, I thought it was a really fun experience.
It was. And it was one of my favorite movie-going experiences. It'd probably be higher if it weren't for another movie that we'll get to in a little bit. This is one of those, maybe like Saw, where people get burnt out and your casual people, like, they dislike Paranormal Activity
because of
Paranormal Activity 5 and the, right, Chosen Ones. But when you think back and you remember, like, how good that was, I still think Paranormal Activity was really good. It was a slow enough burn to where the payoffs were worth it. If you're throwing a jump scare every 15 minutes, they lose their luster. But this had the little subtle stuff, the sheet lifting up, mm-hmm. the footprints, I think is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And I did see it. It was a slow release. Like, this was one of those that just kept opening in more cities. I saw it the weekend that it was here in a packed theater.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Because by that time, everybody had heard this was the scariest movie ever, and they needed to see it. And for a guy that's not going to get a ton of credit by the time the list is over, I'm going to mention him for the second time. Steven Spielberg did have a hand in this. Not as much as he did in Poltergeist, but he had a hand. And people don't think about Spielberg as a great horror director because he's so formidable in other genres, but you kind of got to give him a little bit of a nod here as
well.
It's
one of those that if it gets in the right hands and the right person sees it, boom. And
absolutely.
When Steven Spielberg sees it and likes it, there you go.
If Steven Spielberg doesn't get a ton of run as a mind in horror, Stephen King certainly does. And we've got another Stephen King movie on our list. And at 38, it is 1989's Pet Sematary, directed by Mary Lambert, starring Dale Midkiff, Denise Croxby, and Fred Gwynne. This movie is unsettling. I'm not sure it's scary, but more than anything, I think it's unsettling, and it's scenes like the semi-truck scene, which is terrifying on an entirely different level, and that creepy little kid.
It's scary in a way that horror movies are scary, where there is legit scary stuff, but it's scary more on, I think, like a psychological level without being a psychological thriller. Like,
right. You
put yourself in their shoes of the terrible semi-truck scene, which is done so well, because that's not the kind of scene you can get super gory with. I think you would lose people. I think they did it without sugarcoating it too much and had just the right amount of gore, because that's very, very unsettling. And then you have the husband.
They build up to it so much. Like, you've already, before it happens, you know it's going to happen.
You've braced yourself for it.
It's worse in your head than it is on the
screen. But just that shot of the shoe. And, and you have the marriage aspect and the trying to protect the wife, but the wife trying to protect the husband. There's a lot there. It is a people story, while at the same time being a very, there's a lot going on with the whole biker guy. And, like, there's a lot going on in this movie that I think people forget about until they rewatch it. Because you think about the Achilles. And we did
a couple years ago.
Yeah, we did an episode on this a few years back. And I think it's a really good movie, but it's one that's hard to watch. Even now.
Yeah, I think especially if you have kids and you live on a busy road.
The semi-trucks come up and down all the time.
Not a lot of semi-trucks driving around in the bayou, which is where our number 37 takes place. It is from 2006, directed by Adam Green. It's Hatchet, starring Joel Moore, Dionne Richmond, and Kane Hodder. We're big fans of practical effects, as is going to become super obvious when we get to the top of our list, like the very top. So is Adam Green. In an era where just about everything is CGI, he makes an absolute mess with his Hatchet films. And this is the best of the bunch, the first one, much like a lot of these slasher-type movies are. I think he's got one coming out this year. I think it's called Victor Crowley. That's certainly an homage to a lot of the movies in the 80s that we grew up with. It'll be a little bit higher on our list. But this, to me, feels very much like a movie made by a lover of the genre for other lovers.
Yeah, and I have conflicted feelings about that. I do love Hatchet. I feel like it was marketed wrong. It was marketed as, like, the next great American horror. Like, it was supposed to be what we had with Friday the 13th and stuff that we hadn't seen in a few decades. And it was just a horror comedy. When you cut down to it, it's a horror. It's funny. It's a good movie. Dulé Hill and Joel David Moore, great combo. Like, it was funny. It was good. The slasher elements were good, but it was never that scary slasher, I'm terrified of this man. Adam Green, though, he did that Spiral with Joel David Moore and Zachary Levi. Frozen is another really good one. And Hatchet was kind of his, like, hey, here's this guy that made this really good horror movie. And I wanted to see more really good horror movies from him, and he fell into that
Hatchet 2, Hatchet 3.
Where I would love to see him take something else. I just want to see him do something outside of the Hatchet verse, because everything he did outside of it so far with Frozen Spiral, really, he's a really good filmmaker.
I think it's about time at number 36 that we ran across a Wes Craven movie. We've talked a lot about Wes. We've kind of danced around a lot of Wes Craven movies already to this point. But certainly there's no way you're going to have a top 50 and not have a couple of his movies. And this one is 1996's Scream, starring Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, and David Arquette. Craven's on the Mount Rushmore of horror directors, and in my opinion, at least with Scream, he sort of reinvigorated that slasher genre and exposed that to maybe a new audience in the mid-90s, kids that probably grew up, like myself, with Freddy and Jason, but you know, those weren't really our movies. But Scream, I think, in the Ghostface, that was our horror icon that can be mentioned in the same breath as that other Craven creation that I just mentioned.
It was a competent movie because it's almost satire.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not. That word I try to throw around lightly because I think it has this connotation. But I mean, you have this guy who knows the horror genre satiring the horror genre, and it was great. I think the first one is really good, really competent.
Yes.
The sequels are a different thing, and I do feel like this is responsible for ushering in that 20 years of just really bad teen horror movies.
I know you did last summer.
Like, this kind of kicked those off. It gave them life, and we're still dealing with them. Not as much now, but it still has its place. And I mean, for somebody who decades ago made a really good horror movie that's still culturally relevant, to reinvent himself almost and to kick off a new culturally relevant story, because I mean, now you have Scream on MTV, it's mm-hmm. a TV show. So he's the master of horror. He turned it on its head and still made a quality, competent, modern slasher movie.
I'm not sure, at least to this point in our list, that we've had a movie that fits like the cult status as much as our number 35. And it may be, at least for folks our age, like the easiest way to tell like what kind of horror fan is based off their feelings about Stuart Gordon's Reanimator from 1985, starring Jeffrey Combs, Barbara Crampton, and Bruce Abbott. I think if you're really a fan of the genre, and I'm not saying this is some kind of litmus test where you either like horror movies or you don't, but if somebody gets Reanimator and they like Reanimator, then I think they're going to be real happy with the list, because that's one that kind of separates the wheat from the chaff. You either like just mainstream horror or you can like this as well.
I'm kind of shocked this isn't higher on our list. I thought it might be, but it wasn't. I feel like if you just love horror movies, I feel like Reanimator is top 10 easily. But if you also like movies and just horror movies are one of your favorite genres, I feel like this is about right. If that makes sense. Like, I feel like people that are, I only watch horror movies, I only like horror movies, hold this on a higher pedestal than people that are like, oh, I like movies, but I also really love horror movies.
Maybe they do, but I think we're those people. I mean, we do like other movies, but we really like horror movies. And by having this at 35 on the list, I don't think that's a slight.
Oh, I don't either.
Some of the movies that are above it, like, come on, even if you really like horror, there's going to be movies that we talk about in the next 5 minutes that you're going to be like, yeah, okay, I can see that one being higher. But as much of a horror movie as this is, I also love the sense of humor that this movie has.
It doesn't survive without it.
Cat dead, details later is still like one of my favorite things that I've seen in a movie. I love that.
Like, if you try to gritty this up and you take away the humor, it doesn't work, I don't think. Like, this is one of those where it's crucial. It falls flat without it.
And Jeffrey Combs is the perfect guy for that.
He's not the first person I'm casting if I'm making comedy.
Exactly.
But
I mean,
he pulls it off.
If you're going to remake this, I think you have to remake it with somebody like Combs or like Crispin Glover or somebody like that that's just weird, but you can kind of laugh at.
Yeah.
While he's killing you. Our number 34 has quite a bit of laughs. It is from 2006, directed by James Gunn. It's Slither, starring Nathan Fillion, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Rooker. There is an 80s movie that didn't make the cut that shares quite a bit of DNA with Slither, but Slither is the, I guess, version of Night of the Creeps on coke. This, to me, is James Gunn at his James Gunniest. It's dark, it's gross, it's hilarious. At this point, I fell in love with this guy.
It's creative.
Yes.
Like, that's...
And he's working with people like Nathan Fillion is great as a lead in a James Gunn movie. I wish we could see more of those two guys together. He's fantastic in this movie. The slugs And again, the creature designs for the infested folks are wonderful as well.
Yeah, I love this movie. And I feel like it doesn't have its place in pop culture that it deserves.
Yeah.
Like, more hardcore horror fans remember it, like it, hold it high. But I feel like the average person, like, it is a mainstream movie. It is a fun comedy that's horror. Mm-hmm. And James Gunn has this. Nathan Fillion, I love. You don't really picture him as like, oh, is he an A-list lead movies kind of guy? I mean, yeah, he led Serenity and this. But, you know, James Gunn makes him look like a movie star. Rainn Wilson, is he leading, like, action movies? No, he turned him into an action star, specific movie. Yeah. And, like, even Chris Pratt with Star-Lord, like, he's good at taking these actors and getting what you don't expect out of them. But I love Slither. It was so funny and so good. And just the callbacks to jokes throughout. Like, it's a solid script all the way through. And I think that's where Gunn is way underrated, is as a screenwriter. I think he's very, very gifted as a screenwriter.
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of those ones that I could see people on our list not having seen, because I think you're right. It just kind of came and went. But it's one that, I'll stand on the soapbox for all day, every day. Our number 33, and we've talked a lot about movies and their remakes. This is one that I feel like you could kind of... The original and the remake, I think, are both about as good. Now, obviously, the remake of 1958's The Blob has a little bit more in the gore going for it, because in the 80s, they were just able to show more and able to do more on that budget. I went with 1958's The Blob, directed by Irving S. Yearworth Jr. and Russell S. Dotton Jr., starring one of the biggest stars of that era. You know, we talk about guys that make big transitions into movies. James Gunn is a good example, a guy that started in horror and made his way into, you know, the Marvelverse. Now he's a top cinematic director. Steve McQueen was the star of 1958's The Blob before he became Steve McQueen. He starred opposite Annetta Corsault. Not McQueen's best work, but I think as the creature, as an like unstoppable monster that just pretty much eats everything, The Blob, whether it is the 1958 or the 88 remake of The Blob, had the idea of The Blob the same in each one. And I think that was in the one in the late 50s, I guess you could look at The Blob as like this creeping bit of communism that was just sort of seeping into all areas of society. Maybe you had that a bit in the late 80s. Maybe it was a bit more Cold War stuff or the threat of nuclear extinction, maybe. I'm not sure. But I just love The Blob being an allegory for communism in that particular era. But I like the other one as well.
It's here because you had The Blob at 31 on your list. I had The Blob remake at 33 on my list. So I like them both, so I guess this would be kind of a co-33, but I mean, the original, I would not badmouth the original. I love the 88 one, because I think that more suits me, but it's a cool idea.
And in good conscience, we can't put them both on there.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so I mean, we're 30 years later, I believe we're due for another one. I just feel like they'll screw it up, but we have two really good Blob movies already.
I think they're working on screwing up our number 32, although... If you talk to the director or read the director's tweets, he really doesn't want his son Max to get anywhere near 1981's An American Werewolf in London. That director, of course, John Landis, starring David Naughton, Jenny Agutter, and Joe Belcher. Rick Baker is the star of this movie. He won the first Oscar for makeup and hairstyling, and really all he had to do was send in the first transformation scene where Naughton becomes the werewolf. And just send the jury home. It's fantastic. And to this day, it holds up with practical effects. He did a fantastic job.
Yeah, there's this, and there's a transformation scene, and I don't think it's the original Howling. It might be Howling 3 that I think are really, really... I think it was the same. I think Baker did them both. And this is so good. I agree with John Landis. I would rather not have Max Landis touch anything. especially a classic like this. I mean, they tried with American Werewolf in Paris. Terrible.
It did have Julie Delpy, though.
It did, so, and it had Tom Everett Scott. I like both of them, but it was not good, and it was essentially a remake.
It was
just
a not-funny version of this.
It was the same movie, and just in Paris. But they, I mean, it was the same with The Dead Friend and all that. It's a classic. It's another one of those that it could be just as high in a comedy list as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of the greatest horror comedies of all. That would be if we were going to do a breakout list, I think that would probably be the hardest to do, is where you rank American Werewolf in London as compared to some of the other horror comedies that are a bit higher on our list. You know, earlier in the episode, we were talking about Paranormal Activity and, you know, how that could be higher on the list had it not been for another movie that might kind of come to mind when you think about being scared shitless in the theaters in the late 90s, early 2000s. And at least for my money, nothing best exemplifies that more than Daniel Myrick's and Eduardo Sanchez's The Blair Witch Project from 1999, starring Heather Donahoe and Michael C. Williams and Josh Leonard. It freaks me out that, like, there's people that were born in 1999 that are, like, able to vote now. That's how long ago that movie was. But I think people don't realize how scary that movie was in the theater. And I found myself fascinated that you would go, you'd purchase a ticket for this movie, and some people weren't 100% sure they were watching a movie.
That's where I mentioned earlier that Paranormal Activity would be higher on my favorite movie-going experiences.
Yeah.
If I hadn't seen Blair Witch the opening weekend.
Yeah.
This is pre-everybody having the internet.
Right.
This is pre-smartphone. This is pre-everybody knowing everything about everything. So there were people that, at the end of the movie, there were all these groups having conversations like, is that really real? Because you didn't know. And it was done well enough that there was just enough to place that doubt. They didn't go nuts. They didn't get crazy. They didn't make it way over the top. It was very subtle. It was very slow. And it just planted that seed that, like, maybe? So I think it was great. Even now, I think it's a good movie. I don't think people remember it being as good as it is. A couple years ago, you had taken a month off, and me and Mike Mann actually did this episode and Paranormal Activity. And this should have launched a genre. It didn't.
It sort of did.
Paranormal Activity is what really kicked us into that.
The found footage.
Yeah, I mean, Cloverfield kind of started with the using social media and everything, mm-hmm. but then Paranormal Activity is what kicked off into this giant, for 5 years, let's have a dozen found footage movies. We still get some, but it's dying down a little bit. But that transitions perfectly into our of other found footage horror movies that, I mean, there are a couple that come to mind that aren't terrible. Willow Creek, the Bobcat one.
I feel like I need to explain that Dave does not like found footage as sort of a rule. So when he says they're not awful, take that with a grain of salt. But yeah, looking for the
Willow Creek.
Yeah, that was great.
Wreck.
Yes.
Wreck was good. Lake Mungo.
I put that on there for you.
I like that
I know
movie
you
a
do.
Lot. That's a little creepy ass, I believe, Australian
yeah,
ghost
Australian.
Movie. Mm-hmm. It's a good movie. I don't really think of it as a found footage for some reason. It is. Thinking back, like, yeah, it is. Troll Hunter. I guess I don't really classify that as a horror movie for some reason. In my head, I don't think, but it. Yeah, I like that movie a lot.
And that'll be a discussion for a little bit later, is like what constitutes a horror movie. Because I had a lot of trouble with that on this list.
And we'll talk about that much later in the month.
Sure.
Afflicted. It's a vampire movie from a few years ago. And then the VHS genre,
the series at this point. Yeah.
There's others that maybe aren't.
I do feel like obligated to mention Cannibal Holocaust. I know, I get it. I understand what that movie is, and most people hate it, and that's fine. I'm not even trying to say that I like it. But I think it's very important to bring up when it comes to Blair Witch, because Cannibal Holocaust, if you were able to find it, because it was banned for good reason, that's another one where you're not 100% sure you're not watching something that was real. And in some cases,
like
it
those
was
Faces
real.
Of Death movies.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it, I put it with those where it's like, are they movies? I guess technically, but
specifically, I think that's what made Blair Witch so enthralling, was the fact that it took that line between reality and fantasy and blurred the shit out of it and gave it a snotty nose, and you just didn't know.
And that's an iconic shot. I'm so scared right now. Like, it's still being parodied 20 years
by
later.
By people who don't even know what they're parodying.
Yes, yes. It's so good, though. And, like, I think it's got a bad rap as time has gone on. Like, I think now that kind of invokes a negative connotation, But I think if you could go back in time and see it in theaters opening weekend, if you haven't already, if you didn't get the chance the first time, I think you would have a completely different experience. And a director I like did the remake or sequel last year. I haven't seen it yet, even though I really like him. But this was all I needed. I don't need more Blair Witch. This was kind of nailed perfectly.
If you do need more, and I'm sure you do, because we've probably just whet your appetite for...
We made you wet.
Yes, that as well. For the rest of our list, which we will give to you next week, we're going to kind of space things out a little bit. We'll get into a little bit more detail. The top 30, we're going to take them five at a time.
So if these last two episodes feel like we're sprinting through movies... Thanks for bearing with us. We had to get 10 in the first two.
We're doing like the inverse of Game of Thrones.
The next six will just be five each with some bonus lists in there. But I'm excited for the rest of the month. We're in our top 30 now. I've loved our bottom 20.
If you've loved 50 through 31, you're going to love 30 through 1. They're good.
So until next week.
Keep it up.